Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is April 12, 2015, and this is episode 77, GameBuoy's third annual anniversary celebration spectacular. And also a look at gaming's famous foursomes.
Hey.
I knew you were going to go there. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're celebrating the end of our third year of broadcasting and getting the fourth year off to a good start by looking at some of our favorite famous gaming foursomes.
Ooh, we're kind of in that middle of the console generation of our lifespan.
Ooh, right?
They're going to upgrade us soon.
So buckle in and get ready for that. But first, we have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits. So in the interest of your time and our own, let's get started. Slag, you want to kick this off?
Yeah, even though The Witcher 3 is not out yet, there have already been two big expansions announced. Hearts of Stone and Blood and Wine, which are going to be released in late 2015 and early 2016, respectively.
Excellent. You know, I'm definitely looking into picking up Witcher 3, so I will probably pick up these expansions, too.
Yeah. DuckTales Remastered is now available on iOS and Android, available for $9.99. It will have Bluetooth controller support, so if you are not a fan of touch-based controls on platformers and such, then you're in luck. But if not, then you're a fucked McDuck.
We also have word here on the mobile front that Final Fantasy XIII is now available for smartphone streaming in Japan. You may recall that we had previously talked about that's how Square Enix was going to be releasing this for smartphones. It was a big part of why they got the PC ports ready that are available on Steam now. This has now launched. And as I recall, they had indicated previously that we would eventually see a worldwide release of this product. So, for those of you out there who are not in Japan, can't play this game in Japanese, keep your head up, because it looks like you'll be getting the opportunity soon enough.
That's nice.
We also have word here. We finally got some new information on the upcoming arcade Dissidia Final Fantasy game. One of the trailers that we got was a gameplay debut of Yshtola from Final Fantasy XIV.
Yeah, I love Y'Shotla.
Oh, you. But more excitingly, we also got the character debut reveal of Ramza from Final Fantasy Tactics, complete with a new piece of art of Ramza done by Final Fantasy series mainstay Tetsuya Nomura. This is, of course, a big deal to a lot of us big Final Fantasy nerds, because this is going to be the first spin-off Final Fantasy character who's playable in a Dissidia Final Fantasy game.
Oh, that's true.
This presumably will open the door for consideration to all kinds of fan-favorite characters. You know, characters like Lael from Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles Crystal Bearers. Or, you know, any of the characters from Final Fantasy Mystic Quest. Just, you know, there's a whole world of Final Fantasy series and characters within the Final Fantasy
Even the Play Online servers.
Beg pardon?
Even the Play Online servers as a playable character.
It's a big
computer rack.
I'm not too sure about that one. Either way, this is super exciting. Even if we don't get any other Final Fantasy series spin-off characters, I'm really excited about Ramza being playable in Dissidia. I cannot wait to play this game. Something else that was really quite exciting is that Square Enix revealed that Koei Tecmo's Team Ninja are the ones who are actively developing Dissidia Final Fantasy IV Arcade.
Oh, wow.
They did make a special point of pointing out that the arcade hardware that the game is going to be running on is specifically, a chipset and board based on the PlayStation 4 hardware.
Okay.
So, you know, obviously we're almost certainly going to get an eventual PlayStation 4 release. I had hypothesized as such when this game was first announced, but it's interesting to hear it in an official-ish capacity.
Yeah, you know, I feel good that Toei Tecmo is involved with this.
Oh, you. According to one of the producers over at Square Enix, there is already talk of a console release, but they want the game to flourish in the arcade for at least a year before they really get that to market. So it sounds like they know that people are going to want to play this at home, but they definitely would like to make back their investment in the arcade before they do that.
Yeah, and then it'll just take about 6 years for it to get a Western release.
Oh, F you. And that's actually it for our follow-ups this week. It's been kind of a little bit of a lean week. So let's move on over to...
News. Oh my god, news.
So, about 50 minutes ago, a Bandai Namco website had a teaser countdown that ended. The resultant announcement is the autumn 2015 Japanese 3DS title Project Cross Zone 2, Brave New World. This is, of course, a sequel to the early lifespan 3DS release Project Cross Zone. You may recall that game actually surpassed sales expectations for its unlikely North American release by about 1,000%.
Yeah.
Bandai Namco had specifically said, you know, that their sales expectations were set for the game to be a moderate success, and that the game actually ended up selling about 10 times more units than that. So I expect that we will see a Western release of Project Cross Zone 2. If it's coming in autumn 2015 in Japan, I would expect the North American release to follow maybe early 2016.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And for some of the new characters that are going to be playable in the game, we have Leon Kennedy from Resident Evil 6.
Hey.
Kazuma Kiryu and Goro Majima-san from Yakuza Dead Souls, or Ryuga Gotoku of the End. We have Virgil from Devil May Cry, the titular Shinobi from the well-loved series of games by Sega.
He said Shinobi.
Well played. Kazuya Mishima from Tekken, Strider Hiryu from Strider, and last but certainly not least, Kage Maru from Virtua Fighter. So, looks like there will be a Team Ninja in this game.
So Square Enix had a little alternate reality game going on. It was unfortunately spoiled by a leak from Russia. And what the big reveal was is that Deus Ex Mankind Divided, which is a sequel to Human Revolution, has been
announced.
Yeah, for PS4, Xbox One, and PC.
Excellent. Early word right now is that Square Enix is looking at a 2016 release for this game, but it wouldn't be entirely surprising if it didn't hit until 2017. Looks like a real big, ambitious project. I'm really excited either way. I really enjoyed Human Revolution, and I can't wait to see what's next.
Yeah.
We also have word here of a new PlayStation 4 Godzilla game. This one is called Godzilla Versus, and, we actually know very little about it so far other than it appears to be some kind of enhanced port of the previous PlayStation 3 Godzilla game, released in Japan last year, and which is getting a port here in North America later this year. We are getting a PS4 version of that game. It is yet unknown if that is the same game as what in Japan will be known as Godzilla Versus.
Oh.
So it's a little bit tricky there. You may never hear about this from us again, because if it just turns out to be the exact same game, we're not going to probably talk about it too much more.
Ah. So this is a really neat little piece of history that has come around. You might be familiar with Toshio Iwai-san from the game Electroplankton for the DS, the original DS, about 10 years ago. He had originally made a music composition tool for the Super Famicom called Sound Factory that was designed to be used with the Super Famicom mouse. And it was canceled because they went with Mario Paint, and, you know, everyone knows Mario Paint. However, a prototype version was available on eBay. And so the purchaser, who went by the name Kiro Bomber, gave it a public release for everyone to check out, which is very polite. And the game allows you to use your mouse to create music through playing a number of mini-games.
Excellent. Well, there is a ROM for this that has been posted to the internet. They link to it over on Silicon Era, which we will link to you over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And, you know, as we've stated here on the show, we're not necessarily going to suggest that you just download ROMs and pirate games, but especially in cases like this where it's a game that you will not be able to play any other
right.
way, and it's a real artifact and of gaming history, I wholeheartedly recommend you take a look at this and check this one out.
Yeah.
We also have word that the 20-year-old Age of Empires 2 is going to be getting another expansion. And I'm sorry, I mean, I said 20 years old because I think of it as like 20 years old. It's actually 16 years old. I know you were coming for me, Slaggy.
No, I was just about to say, whoa, whoa, whoa.
What does that mean?
It's the noise that the priest made, right?
Oh my gosh, totes.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
In any event, I'm a huge Age of Empires 2 fan. In fact, I have it on Steam. If any of y'all out there ever want to challenge me, feel free to drop a note. I would love to play. Love, love, love this game, and I will absolutely, absolutely, absolutely be buying this expansion.
Yeah, I need to pick up the HD version. I remember, like, years ago at this point that you were trying to get me into playing the non-HD version.
You know, I actually have a copy of it on Steam to give away as a gift. I'll see if I can give that to you.
Or you can just dangle it over my head.
That would be mean. We also, just earlier this weekend, last night in fact, got the announcement from Capcom of an upcoming JRPG title for the Nintendo 3DS. This one is based on the Monster Hunter franchise and is a cel-shaded game called Monster Hunter Stories. The design of the game is noticeably different, including a much different feline slash palico, and the player character appears to ride monsters as mounts. It looks super adorable.
Right.
They're saying, you know, that they haven't talked about the gameplay a whole lot yet, but, you know, that we should be expecting this to be a JRPG that is specifically about the difference between monster tamers and monster hunters. So it kind of sounds like it could be like Monster Hunter meets Pokemon.
Right? Oh my god, like, as if Monster Hunter wasn't big enough already.
Right?
All I know is that I want to fly around on a Rathalos.
Yeah, absolutely. I need me a rideable Goldrathian, like, right now.
Yeah, so you should check out the trailer. I mean, I have no idea how much of it is actual gameplay footage, but it looks beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We also got the announcement of another toy video game, you know, by which I mean, you know, similar to Amiibo, Disney Infinity, Skylanders. But this one is a Lego product. I'm talking specifically about LEGO Dimensions, and this game is selling itself in terms of branding as a crossover LEGO game featuring worlds from DC Comics, Lord of the Rings, Wizard of Oz, and Back to the Future
and the LEGO movie.
In the initial lineup, as well as, yes, the LEGO movie. Obviously, if you're interested in this sort of thing, you're probably already aware that it's coming. Either way, this is going to be available in stores in 2015, in, I believe, September, they were saying, for the PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, Xbox 360, Xbox One, Wii U, and no PC port, interestingly.
Interesting.
And last but certainly not least, we have word here that Yo-Kai Watch has been licensed by Viz Media, because I'm only talking about the manga.
Yeah.
We're gonna get Volume 1 of the Yo-Kai Watch manga for release in English in North America in September of 2015. Oh, but wait, there's more. On April 7th, Level 5 had a fan festival.
That's right. We were talking about that.
Slaggy, would you like to talk about some of the news that came out of this Level 5 fan festival?
Yeah, one of the biggest pieces of news, arguably, is that Nintendo will be publishing Yo-Kai Watch in the West. So getting some of their money, getting their hands on some of that Yo-Kai Watch money, honey.
Yep, absolutely. We don't yet have any release window for this game.
Aside from 2016.
Well, strictly speaking, they didn't even announce that. But that's sort of the safe assumption at this point. either way, Nintendo has sent out press releases indicating they're going to be publishing the game in the United States, Latin America, Europe, Australia, New Zealand, and Korea. We also have word here out of the Level 5 Fest. I'm sorry, Level 5 Vision 2015, The Beginning.
The Beginning.
This is the beginning of the rest of your life. That Professor Layton 7 is going to be releasing soon. For smartphones.
Oh.
In Japan. Yeah. So, you know, apparently more details on Layton 7 will be revealed in the near future. The game is going to be releasing in Japan for iPhone and Android devices this summer. There was previously indicated a Nintendo 3DS version of this game, but no mention of it was made during the actual game reveal last week.
Yeah, so those of you who are fans of Fantasy Life, like us here on GameBuie.org,
GameBuie.org,
might be excited that Fantasy Life 2, Two Moons on the Village of God, was announced at the Level 5 Vision 2015, the beginning event. And it's for smartphones as well.
Yep, much like Layton 7 before it, Fantasy Life 2, Two Moons, and the Village of God will be launching in Japan this summer for iPhone and Android devices. The game looks very similar to the original 3DS version and even appears to reuse several areas and art assets from that game. We also have word of Level 5's next major cross-media project. This is going to be a game called Snack World.
Yum, 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 yum.
It looks super, super, super cute. The reveal movie is done as almost like a little series of comedy bits. I thought it was super adorable. And if you're interested in hearing more about it, there actually is an English-dubbed official version of this trailer. So, easy money is that we will be getting a North American release of the 3DS and Android iOS games of Snack World. And maybe we'll even get the animated series, manga, and merchandise that Level 5 has also announced in relation to this new IP.
Yeah, there's a little Crystal Sword amiibo sort of thing.
Oh, interesting.
Presumably it's like a NFC thing.
Yeah, in fact, during the Level 5 presentation, they were very specifically using a new 3DS and touching the Crystal Sword to the bottom touch screen, which is where the NFC sensor is on the new 3DS. We also have word here that Yo-Kai Watch is getting a crossover collaboration for Nintendo 3DS, Yo-Kai Watch cross Romance of the Three Kingdoms.
Okay.
Which I'm not quite sure why we are going to be getting, but you know, we got Pokemon Tactics or Pokemon Three Kingdoms, whatever they called it.
Nobunaga X.
Oh, that was a Nobunaga's Ambition crossover, not a Romance of Three Kingdoms crossover.
Pokemon Conquest.
Yeah, that's what it was called in North America. Either way, I expect Yo-Kai Watch Three Kingdoms to be very similar to that. And I'm very excited for that, because I like Yo-Kai Watch, and I like Three Kingdoms.
Yeah, so expect more details from Fevel Live and Toei Kekmo in the near future.
We also have word that the upcoming Yo-Kai Watch 3, which was formally announced at this event, is, at least in part, going to be taking place in the USA.
Specifically in the town of St. Peanutsburg. Yes, you heard that right, St. Peanutsburg.
Now, the main character of the game, Keita Amano-san, or as he's going to be called in the American version, Nathan Adams, is moving to the USA. This is why the game takes place, at least in part, in the USA. But several of the game's main characters will be remaining in Japan, so it is speculated that there will probably also still be portions of the game that take place in Japan.
Interesting.
You know, Level 5 also mentioned that part of why we're going to be seeing this crossover to the USA is that in Yo-Kai Watch 3, we will be seeing yokai based around more Western mythology and folklore.
Oh.
With, you know, many of the yokai from Yo-Kai Watch 1 and 2 being based and rooted in Japanese myth and folklore. I guess they're using the new setting as fodder for new monsters.
I hope they have a yokai that's like, you know, the ghosts that haunt the Toys R Us.
Oh my gosh, right? Anyway, that's about it for the Level 5 Festival. So, with that having been said, I think it's time for our new segment.
Controversial.
Oh my god.
Right? Like, gag me with a spoon. Welcome to our new segment, So Controversial. This is going to be sort of our place to talk about occurrences and events in the games world that maybe aren't strictly follow-ups or news, but...
Or necessarily doom and glooms.
Or doom and glooms, yeah. Things we just want to talk about because they're notable.
Controversial.
Exactly. The first one here is that Joe, Angry Joe Vargas, he is a, I guess, somewhat big YouTuber. And I say somewhat big because he has, you know, nearly 2 million subscribers, which is nearly 2 million subscribers more than we have.
But not on the level of, like, PewDiePie or whatever.
But exactly. Basically, he had uploaded a video that was him playing Mario Party 10, and basically Nintendo flagged him for copyright and, you know, that they were going to have to work out their profit sharing that we've talked about here in the past. And I guess Angry Joe refuses to do that. He does not care. He feels that Nintendo got free ad revenue and coverage generated for them. And how dare they do this to him? I believe his actual quote was, "I hope at Nintendo America enjoyed the free ad revenue and coverage I generated for him. It will be my last Nintendo video. Meanwhile, you laugh while we step over each other to buy your stupid fucking plastic toys like they are Ultra Beanie Babies," which he spelled incorrectly. At Nintendo America. He did not tweet that he spelled incorrectly. He just spelled it incorrectly.
Yep.
Either way, you know, I watched this video, and, you know, I have to say, like, his whole thing is that, you know, and the thing that many YouTubers talk about is that they add content to these videos, you know, they add video content, they add commentary, and so it's like a fundamentally different experience from just a video of the game. But, like, I'll admit, this is literally the only episode or video or whatever of Angry Joe's that I watched, but, I didn't feel like he said anything interesting or valuable or game-related at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really, watching, I was just like, first off, there were, like, long periods of, like, silence. And I'm just like, I mean, I'm just watching a couple people play Mario Party. Like, there's no creative anything that they added to it. I didn't feel like they really added any editorial content to it. So, I don't know. If I was Nintendo, I would have flagged it, too.
Yeah, I have thoughts and issues with the idea of being a full-time YouTuber, but hey, you do you, I guess.
Well, that's because you've bought so into the capitalist mindset that you have a hard time with the idea of alternative careers and lifestyles.
All right, yeah.
But
I wouldn't say I'm not into alternative lifestyles, such as...
You know what I meant.
Such as Wall, the main character of Mobius Final Fantasy.
Which you may recall, we've previously been calling Mevius Final Fantasy. This is an official change by Square Enix. I almost called them Capcom. Basically, the game was previously titled Mevius, but it was always meant to be Mobius.
Okay, yeah.
But, you know, it's just sort of a translation issue given that, you know, the B and V issue from Japanese to English.
And that's so controversial because, oh my god, there's a copyright infringement with Sega and the planet Mobius. No, I'm totally kidding. So, Wall, who is the hero, or Walru, I don't know. He was sporting some side butt and side abs and looking pretty sexy, and they decided they needed to cover up the side abs and the side butt.
But it's clear to, it's important to point out, they decided to cover it up because so many male gamers complained that this man being dressed this way made them uncomfortable. That's why this is shocking and controversial. Because Square Enix has designed way skimpier clothing for literally every one of its female characters.
Mm-hmm.
The one time they do something fan service-y to a male character, and they immediately bow to pressure to change the costume design. And something that's funny about Wall in this game in particular is that he has tattoos on his body, including on his arm and a large piece on his back, that apparently have ties to the game's storyline. And so they wanted these tattoos to be on display is sort of the root of why this costume was designed this way.
Oh, no.
They have stated that even the new costume is going to have an open back because it's important that the character be showing that skin.
Sorry, bro, that your sexuality was threatened by a sexy bishi.
This, to me, any guy who complained about this or felt glad that this got changed... Like, if you have these feelings, but you're the kind of person that complains about, like, feminist frequency videos about feminism in games and what have you, you know, you really need to look in the mirror because you are literally, for the first time ever in gaming, experiencing what women deal in gaming every minute of every day ever. Except, your complaints got addressed positively to the way that you wanted them to be addressed.
Almost immediately.
Meanwhile, Lightning still dresses like Lightning, Lara Croft still dresses like Lara Croft, and women are just expected to accept that the world will keep on spinning.
If this character had been female, there would have been a complaint probably that there wasn't enough side boob or side abs or side butt.
Right? And last, but certainly not least.
If you want to help support this, and you have a resemblance to Wall, you should go cosplay with the side abs and the side butt.
And I do want to mention, kudos to Square Enix. They have stated that they have retained all of the data for the original version of the costume and will release it for people that are interested in playing that way. You will still have access to that costume. They're just not sure what form that will take yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reason why this comes up is that this game has a very similar system to Final Fantasy X's Dress Sphere system, where sort of your job abilities are related to your costuming. Anyway, last but certainly not least, last weekend, the Capcom Pro Tour event occurred in Northern California, specifically a regionals competition. Man, I can't talk about regionals without thinking of Glee. Since you've been gone!
LOL.
They performed that song at regionals, right?
Probably.
Or, wait, was it that or My Life Would Suck Without You?
No, actually, they performed that after they got back from regionals. Glee!
I knew that if I baited you, you would talk about Glee legitimately.
Ah!
Anyway, at this event, the tournament was played for several rounds before the tournament organizers realized that they were playing on an Xbox that hadn't yet updated the game data. So they were unintentionally competing on version 1.0 rather than 1.04. Ultimately, Capcom ended up just sweeping all of the previous results under the table, and they replayed every match. But it's just really interesting to sort of think about the way that games patching works in conjunction with tournament play, especially on like the higher competitive end, where each and every bug fix and balance change could really fundamentally affect the outcome of a match.
Yeah, specifically, one of the original winners, Ryota Kazunoko Inoue, had lost in one of the rematches and had flown out from Japan to participate in this. So, thankfully, John Choi, who is the tournament organizer, has offered to pay his expenses to another Capcom Pro Tour event in California.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
Also, interestingly, this was a Polygon article syndicated over on Yahoo. I didn't realize they'd been doing that.
Oh, excellent. Well, good on Polygon. All right, well, we don't have any doom and gloom this week, so I think it's time to get into our silly little discussion here. And, you know, we do these sort of more lighthearted discussions, specifically just to give us a little bit of a break. You know, we, as silly as our show can be, we put a lot of work into researching all this stuff that we're talking about. So this is a little bit of a chance for us to have a breather and just talk about something that we really like. And this time, you know, Sidekick and I were looking at the theme of four-player games, and we started to research the history of four-player games a little bit, but we decided it would be a little more fun just to talk about sort of our favorite four-man teams in gaming.
Yeah, because we are about to enter year four.
Exactly. So, wow. Slaggy, I know this first bunch of characters were ones that you came up with. Why don't you talk to me a little bit about this first team of four, what games they appear in, and why you like them?
Well, this first team of four is probably pretty clear and pretty obvious to anyone listening. That is Mario, Luigi, Peach, and Toad. And, of course, they originally made their first appearance as a foursome, so to speak, in Super Mario Brothers 2. So, I just always loved the ability to choose between the four characters in Mario 2. I loved that each one had their own unique abilities. And, I mean, you've probably heard me speak many times about, up until Super Mario 3D World, that I was really pissed that they included two Toads instead of Peach. And what a big deal it was that they included Peach back in that foursome for Super Mario 3D World.
Absolutely.
I mean, and technically Rosalina is unlockable, so something, something, five, some, but still, you know, it really is a return to the original quartet. And of course, these four characters appear in like pretty much every Mario spinoff game as well, but in terms of them being like a core team of four characters, you know, we really look to Super Mario Brothers 2, where admittedly they are played separately. It's a single player game. But when we look at Super Mario 3D World, which, you know, in a lot of ways is the pastiche of all the different Mario games so far, you have the four-player co-op. So really, truly epitomizing that they are the crown jewels of Nintendo's gaming character roster.
Well said, well said. And, you know, I know that you had another one right up and ready to go. Why don't we get into that one? I know that it's a very well-loved franchise that all of our listeners are going to know unilaterally.
Oh, yeah. This is a set of four characters who do all appear at the same time. And they have been long-standing in the world of gaming since the very, very early 80s. I, of course, am talking about Inky, Blinky, Pinky, and Clyde, the four ghosts of the Pac-Man world, Pac-Land, the Pac-Universe. And, I mean, when we started talking about teams of four in gaming, like, obviously Mario, Luigi, Peach, and Toad were the first, but then I thought, oh my gosh, ghosties, even though they are your adversaries, I would say that they are very well loved. I particularly have a soft spot for Clyde, because he is the one without the rhyming name. But, you know, they are really, like, not only very iconic for the series, but also really core to the gameplay. I mean, they're your obstacles. If you run into them, they're gonna nom you up.
Nom, nom, nom.
Yeah.
Nom, nom, nom in the head.
Nom, nom, nom.
And you know this next one, and even though it was Slaggy's choice, I'm actually going to explain it a little bit. Another favorite foursome of ours here in studio was the survivor characters from Left 4 Dead.
Yeah.
That, of course, would be Francis the biker, Bill the Vietnam vet, Zoe the university student, and Louis the district account manager.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the characters all play exactly the same in-game, but for me, the thing that really makes this group of four really stand out were all of the, like, faux movie posters in the game. You know, every scenario in the game, when you're loading it up, the scenarios have, you know, titles similar to, like, campy B films, and all of the movie posters feature those four characters in various, like, poses for that movie. And to me, it just made them really stand out, even if otherwise they were basically Chell-style Portal non-characters, basically.
Yeah, and I think, like, it's really easy for us to assign, you know, personalities to these non-characters in a lot of ways.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Did you have a favorite?
You know, my favorite of them was probably Francis.
Yeah, I like Francis for being a biker daddy, but I also really like Zoe.
Yeah, well, I like Francis.
Who's that girl? It's Zoe!
Oh my god, well done. But yeah, I liked Francis a lot. I thought he was kind of a fine character design.
Right?
But I like them all. I think they're all really cool. I don't want to talk about any of the ongoing plot, but, you know, just be aware, we picked these four for a reason, and yes, we know. That having been said, next up we have everybody's favorite Earthbound foursome, Ness, Paula, Jeff, and Pooh.
What'd you call me?
Pooh.
Haha. No, we love Pooh, though.
So, you know, I feel like it's probably sort of a no-brainer why we picked these characters. We're big fans of Earthbound here in studio. Slagkick, perhaps even more than me, simply by virtue of the fact that he is currently playing through the game.
Yeah.
I have only, not only, but I have not played the game in probably 15 years at this point. Either way, Earthbound is an incredible game. These characters have really stuck with us, and they remain, you know, an integral part of one of our favorite game series here in studio.
Indeed. A really iconic RPG party, for sure.
You were insistent that we include this next one, Slaggy, so why don't you kick us off?
Oh, you mean the heroes in a half shell?
Turtle power!
Of course, when I think of four players in classic gaming, not that they had to be from a classic game or anything, but I immediately thought back to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade game. Of course, this could pretty much apply to any Ninja Turtles game, but, I mean, come on, really, the original arcade game was the best. You could play as your favorite turtle, and so, you know, we had Donatello, Raphael, Leonardo, and Michelangelo, who need no real other introduction. You know, and I like the NES games, too, and there were some for, there's like one for the GameCube, it might have also been for PS2 and Xbox at the time, but, there have been some okay, decent games and, you know, the kind of the beat-em-up style of the original arcade game in, you know, not too distant past. So I think, you know, anytime that the Turtles make an appearance in a game, it's generally better than not.
Absolutely. And, you know, I want to point out just very briefly that in a very similar related note to that, we did not forget the Konami Arcade Bucky O'Hare game. This was made very, very similarly. If you enjoy those Konami Arcade Ninja Turtles games, you will almost certainly like the arcade Bucky O'Hare game that Konami did a short while later. The playable characters were Bucky O'Hare, Jenny the telepathic cat, Deadeye Duck, and Blinky the android. And whether you're super into Bucky O'Hare or not, I'm certainly not generally, but it is a great game. The sprite work is super good, and it just feels really solid, almost kind of like a halfway point in between Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade and, like, Simpsons arcade that Konami did in that
same
window.
Oh, yeah.
So definitely check it out. Once again, this would be another prime example of what we were talking about earlier with emulation. There was no port of this game ever released anywhere. There was a really cool Bucky O'Hare NES game that Konami published, but it plays completely differently.
Mm.
It is not a side-scrolling beat-em-up. Either way, I would recommend you check out this arcade game. And Slaggy, why don't you give us another popular team of four that we love?
Yeah, this one will be very recent for your listening memory. And I, of course, am talking about Kirby, King Dedede, Meta Knight, and Waddle Dee, who appear as a playable foursome in Kirby's Return to Dreamland.
Oh, excellent. That's a very good pick. Why did you pick them?
Well, one, because we just talked about Kirby, but I mean, you know, really, the four of them have been so iconic to the series, even when they weren't, you know, all playing together as friends. But I mean, Return to Dreamland really, you know, brought them together, and, you know, similarly to other games where different characters have different moves, you know, they could all do kind of different things. And I just liked it because I like when Dedede and Waddle Dee and Meta Knight appear as friendly, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I want to build on the all of them having different abilities and attributes, because I want to talk about another of our favorite foursomes. This, of course, is the cast of characters from the arcade-only Capcom classic Alien vs. Predator. May be familiar with this. It's never gotten a home port of any kind, so once again, emulation is your friend. There was talk once upon a time of the game getting a port to the Sega 32X, but unfortunately that never substantiated. Either way, the team of four here is the Predator Warrior, the Predator Hunter, Major Dutch Schaefer, and Lieutenant Lin Kurosawa. In Grand Street Fighter tradition, you could do button inputs to do special attacks and combos in this game. This was a Final Fight clone, so to speak, so, you know, similar to the beat-em-ups, Ninja Turtles, Simpsons, Bucky O'Hare that we've talked about here.
Mm-hmm.
Except characters would have, like, Street Fighter-style shoryukens and fireballs and... you would have, characters would start with guns, and they would have a gun button. Certain characters would start with weapons rather than having to find weapons that you picked up. So this game was very, very different from the norm, sort of the established tropes of the beat-em-up genre at the time. So, you know, this is a game that, despite having never gotten a home port in any capacity, is still super, super, super well-loved by those of us who remember it. And to me, it was a natural fit for this, famous foursome, because it's just really cool the way that all of these characters have different combos. Even their, like, punch combos are all completely different. They all have different attributes for the way they jump, the way they do jump attacks. All of their special attacks are different. All of the guns that they start with are different. It is just four completely different characters within the same style of game, back when that didn't really happen in these games. The biggest difference you would have is something like, oh, Donatello has a slightly better reach than Raphael.
Mm.
This is like straight up like, oh, some characters can kill aliens with one or two hits, and some have to be super fast and use their agility to get like 20 hits in.
Oh, wow.
It was a very different experience playing one character to another, back when this genre wasn't known for that. So I think it's really cool. And, you know, Lin Kurosawa, she was like a female warrior, like lady ninja, human cyborg, hunting aliens. She's actually a very well-loved character who appears in fan art and in a lot of the Namco Capcom crossover projects, even today. Slaggy, I think you have another one.
I have a few more, yeah. The next ones I'd like to highlight are from the arcade game Dungeons & Dragons Tower of Doom, which is, you know, now available as part of the Chronicles of Nistara pack for 360 and PS3. And that is the Fighter, the Elf, the Cleric, and the Dwarf. You know, these four characters all had, like, you know, their own unique abilities based on Dungeons & Dragons and such, but, you know, making it really fun to have your friends pick another character and, you know, fighting along through the Tower of Doom.
Yeah. Now, I've talked about how much I love Tower of Doom here on the show. I don't know that I can necessarily add a whole lot to that earlier discussion, but, again, just a fantastic game, great characters. They all, again, control quite differently, and I think you could even make an argument for tracing the DNA of that game back to Alien vs. Predator.
Yeah.
Somewhat interestingly is that I want to tie this in to another game along that same sort of genealogy. This is Capcom's Captain Commando.
Capcom.
Exactly. This one did get ports to the SNES, PlayStation, PlayStation 2, Xbox, and PSP. In addition to having been available on PC via the GameTap service back in the day.
Oh, wow.
The team in question, of course, is Capcom himself, Captain Commando, Mac the Knife, or Jinetti in the Japanese version, Ginzu the Ninja, or Sho in the Japanese version, and Babyhead, or Hoover in the Japanese version. And this is once again a
Kennedy Davenport and RuPaul's Drag Race.
A side-scrolling beat-em-up, in sort of the style of Final Fight. We used to just call all of these Final Fight clones. And it once again follows sort of the idea of all of the characters having different attacks and different attributes. So again, taking a step away from that established trope of, all of the characters having the same attributes. Except again, you know, when I bring up Final Fight, Final Fight did this to some extent by having Hagar have a few different, properties from Cody and Guy, but Cody and Guy having basically the same attributes. And the reason why we're not talking about Final Fight in this episode is because they are a famous threesome.
Hey.
Wow, wow. But once again, great game, Captain Commando. I recommend you check it out if you're into this genre of game. It's a really great time, and I love these characters. They are so adorably quirky. And, you know, they've cameoed in such games as Marvel vs. Capcom 1 and 2, where Capcom himself was a playable character, and he would have supers where his friends would come out to help him.
Cute.
Slaggy, why don't you give me another?
So, I want to take it way, way, way back to one of the original four-player arcade games. I'm talking about Gauntlet, of course, with Warrior, Wizard, Valkyrie, and Elf. Wizard needs food badly. And, I mean, you can just say that, and anyone who is over the age of, I don't know, 30 maybe, will pretty much immediately know what you're talking about. Again, just like very iconic in terms of a set of four characters. You know, I'm sure everybody has their favorite that they go to. And really, like I said, notable because it was one of the first four-player arcade games.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great pick. Very, very, very well done. I have one more famous foursome here.
Okay.
And this is once again another Capcom side-scrolling beat-em-up. This one, once again, was an arcade exclusive. This was Cadillacs and Dinosaurs.
Oh my god, Kesha loves both of those.
Ah, well played. This game was produced as a tie-in to the Cadillacs and Dinosaurs animated series, which was itself based on the comic series published by, I think, Dark Horse back in the day. Xenozoic Tales.
Was that based on a toy line by Hasbro?
I don't believe it was. But once again, you know, this game once again followed the idea of each character having a different type with their own strengths, weaknesses, and unique attacks. So we had Jack Tenrek, who is considered the balanced type. He was a mechanic and a shaman. Hannah Dundee, who is considered the skill type. She was a diplomat and an explorer who had, like, a lot of, like, speed and combo type stuff. We had Mustafa Cairo, who was the speed type, who was just straight up all speed all the time, in and out assassin tactics. He was, storyline-wise, a friend of Jack's and an engineer. Then we had Mess Obradovich, who was the power type, which, being a Capcom game, just think of him as Hagar and you're on the right track.
Mm.
This game never got any port of any kind, unfortunately. But again, you know, it follows the Final Fight mold, and if you're interested in sort of following that DNA from where it starts to where it begins, I think Cadillacs and Dinosaurs is an integral piece. As with all of these games that I've talked about here that are not available at home, have never received any port, your only real solution to play these kinds of games is emulation. And I implore you, don't be scared of that. Some of these games are absolute gems that, if you like this genre, really need to be played.
Yeah. I have one more and then kind of a joke one.
All right, go for it.
So I really could have chosen any number of, you know, because there's multiple entries in this franchise at this point, but I chose to go with Borderlands 2. What you been playing? Borderlands 2! And, you know, some people maybe would say that their favorite foursome was the original Borderlands quartet, but I don't know, I just really like the characters in Borderlands 2 a lot. Of course, I'm talking about Axton the Commando, Maya the Siren, Salvador the Gunzerker, and Zero the Assassin. And yes, I do know that there were other characters as DLC, but they are really the core four. And you know,
no mo-hos, core four.
Ah! Even though they were, you know, kind of clones of the original four Borderlands characters in terms of gameplay, you know, just really injected with their own unique personalities, and, you know, I'm, like I said, the thing that I really love about Famous Foursomes is that, like, the different play styles allow you to kind of identify with one. I always really liked Maya a lot, and Zero, that, you know, they're all pretty cool, and the Borderlands series, I think, does a pretty good job of having some Famous Foursomes that people really like to play.
Excellent, excellent. I would definitely agree with that, and I'm really glad you brought that up, because that would be a real huge missed opportunity from us.
Yeah, and this other one, I'm really disappointed that you did not include on the show notes. I, of course, am talking about Green Link, Red Link, Blue Link, and Purple Link from Four Swords and Four Swords Adventures.
Oh, God.
All the other Four Swords games.
Ugh. I mean, well done, but can we not?
There are four different Links.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. Just, geez, can
who is
not?
Your which is your favorite of the four Links?
Blue.
See, I always like Purple Link.
I like Purple Link too, though. Purple Link is pretty good. Okay, well, do you have any other foursomes?
No, except this one time playing Tetris. Oh my God, no.
Well, you know, I just want to talk real quick. You know, a lot of the games we talked about here did involve four-player co-op gameplay. And, I just want to talk a little bit about the history of four-player games at home. You know, obviously there were games like Anticipation we talked about previously that
pass
were sort
the controller
of,
style.
Sort of had pass the controller style. In that game in particular, you were supposed to, like, hold half of the controller in your hand with, like, if I'm player four, maybe I'm using player two's controller, and I have the A and B buttons, and that's what I use to buzz in. I'm supposed to be, like, holding it at the same time with my left hand as player three is holding the cross pad with his right hand.
F that.
And whichever one of us buzzes in first is supposed to get the controller to enter in our,
oh my God, did anyone ever, like, name. Fight over that and be like, mine?
They certainly did in my house, but, you know, I didn't exactly have a traditional childhood. you know, you could sort of see Nintendo sort of experimenting with this, because that was a game published by Nintendo, developed by Rare, and just about a year after that released, they released their first official NES multi-tap. They did not call it a multi-tap. Multi-tap is, of course, short for multiplayer adapter. But basically, they released the NES Satellite in late 89, which, with supporting games, would allow up to four players to play.
Yeah.
There was also, it used a IR sensor to essentially have the multi-tap sit, like, couch-side using IR to communicate with your NES. For people with gigantic living rooms, I guess. So that the controller ports would be, like, right next to wherever you set it down, for next to your couch, for where in the example that I was using.
Oh, man, I remember the first time I saw a Satellite, I was like, what?
Right? And, you know, there weren't necessarily a ton of games that took advantage of the NES Satellite, but there were things like Bomberman 2, Gauntlet 2, Harlem Globetrotters, Mule, Nightmare on Elm Street, which we've talked about tons of times here in studio, RC Pro-Am 2, Nintendo World Cup, Spot, which was a really cool Othello-style game, Smash TV, Super Off-Road, Super Jeopardy, and, you know, stuff like Top Players Tennis, among many others. But it was a really cool idea. And in fact, Nintendo sort of built on this idea when a year and a half later, they released the Fourscore, which was basically the exact same idea except without the weird IR thing. So this just had a long cord that you plugged in. You didn't have to worry about any IR weirdness for the adapter properties. And it just let you plug in four controllers to your NES.
Nice.
Now, I seem to recall that there were some games that worked with one, but not the other. But, unfortunately, I was unable to find anything that really tracked that, so it might just be me misremembering something. I do seem to recall, at least, that most of the Kunio-kun games in Japan supported the Fourscore.
Hmm.
You know, I also wanted to mention, you know, we, also, there was a multi-tap for the TurboGrafx-16 / PC Engine. It's actually considered to be the first multi-tap. And it's kind of interesting because the PC Engine / TurboGrafx-16 initially only had one controller port. So in order to do multiplayer gaming, you had to have a multi-tap. Which, you know, a lot of people don't really remember. And that was actually where Bomberman blew up, was as a five-player game using the TurboGrafx-16 / PC Engine multi-tap on the, you know, TurboGrafx-16 PC Engine. Obviously, Hudson was a huge supporter of that platform, and, you know, they really sort of established that series there. Then, you know, down the line a little bit, we had multi-tap ideas and concepts for the Mega Drive / Sega Genesis and the Super Nintendo. Something that was actually really strange was that the Sega Genesis / Mega Drive had a lot of games that were released with joypad ports in the cartridge themselves.
Weird.
Not necessarily a ton of them per se, but there were definitely a handful. Slaggy, if you want to see what one of these looks like, you can look at my computer monitor right now.
Wow.
This in particular is one of the Micro Machines games. I guess they called this technology the J-Cart, you know, I find very interesting. There were a handful of Electronic Arts games for the Sega Genesis that utilized this, sports games in particular, Electronic Arts, go figure. And funny enough, you know, Electronic Arts and Sega always had a little bit of an arms war, and so Sega ended up releasing their own four-player adapter that they didn't even really support very well, but which was specifically incompatible with EA's games.
Oh!
So, yeah, there's a lot of that weirdness between the two of them. Nintendo, once again, pushing the four-player envelope, did their own Super Multi-Tap for the Super Nintendo, which was actually initially bundled with a new version of Bomberman specifically designed to be played, you know, with the multi-tap. That was, of course, Super Bomberman. The multi-tap was, of course, the Super Multi-Tap, because in that era, everything had to be Super Something. This was the first four-player game to be released on the Super NES, and you could tell that it really opened up some eyes for Nintendo, because it was a big deal when the Nintendo 64 was announced to be releasing with four controller ports.
Right.
Obviously, you know, we're sort of downplaying all of the real history here, because, you know, it was more complex than all that. But you, obviously, if you're listening to this show, you've played a four-player game at some point. We've also talked about how the Nintendo 64 really pioneered the whole four-player game as an expectation. We're able to, like, sit here and talk about little lists of, like, oh, these were the four-player games on this platform, these were the four-player games on that platform. Nintendo 64 was really where that becomes impossible to do, because suddenly it wasn't which games have four-player support, it was which games don't.
Right.
So, you know, it's very cool, very cool. Unfortunately, the Sega Saturn and the PlayStation 1 did not have four controller ports. So, in both instances, both of these consoles did get multi-taps released. And in fact, the PlayStation 2 also got a multi-tap. So, Sega had to make a multi-tap for the Saturn. That is, of course, where the best multiplayer version of Bomberman can be found to this day. It has, like, ridiculous number of simultaneous players, like 8-player Bomberman or something.
Wow.
Yeah. It's really cool. I'll have to set that up here in studio sometime, maybe for Game Boy Party Games, Games Party 2.
Yeah.
The sequel. You were saying?
The pre-sequel. No, I was saying it's really interesting, especially looking at, for example, the list of games supported by the PlayStation Multitap. Overwhelmingly, it supports 4 players. You know, there were a couple that supported 5 or 8, but it's just really interesting to think of 4 players as, like, the right number of players. You even think of things like Rock Band, for example, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
And, I mean, really just that, at this point, even still with things like the gamepad for Wii U and, you know, lots of online multiplayer and stuff, that 4 players still feels like the right number.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, Sega, while they did do the Saturn multi-tap, they followed Nintendo's example with the Dreamcast, and the Dreamcast
sure did.
Also had 4 controller ports, and that was home to many well-loved party games that we still love today, both here in studio and our fans and listeners out there in Internet Radio Land.
Yeah.
Power Stone is the easy one that comes to mind.
Oh, yes.
So, anyway, you know, we should probably move forward. I wanted to do a little something with the notes that we had taken for this game back when we were the notes that we took for this topic back when we were initially researching it. If you have any favorite 4-player games, we'd love to hear it. You can, tweet at us, hashtag GameBuoy Extra, talk about
hashtag
your favorite 4-player games. And obviously, I'd be interested in hearing about any famous gaming foursomes that those of you out there love as well.
Nice.
With that having been said, I think unless Saigi has anything else to add, it's time to move on.
Nope.
First up here, we have a Smash. You may recall, of course, that our Smashes every week are video articles in internet gaming journalism that we feel are particularly well done. This is an article called The Mystery of Bloodborne's Beast Mode. I did not...
Beast Mode, bro!
I did not pick this article just because I'm super into Bloodborne right now. I picked it because it takes a look at what was initially a talked-about feature in Bloodborne, which, in the released product, still is referenced to pretty actively in the game, even though the feature itself doesn't appear to be a part of it. But rather than being a bad thing, it's basically talking about how this is something that is still ongoing. Gamers are still actively finding new features in this game, including some that feel like they might lead to this quote-unquote beast mode. And the thing that I really love about this article is it doesn't jump to conclusions, it doesn't jump to, we put in a call to From Software, but they did not respond. Like, they are pulling up tweets, they're pulling up Reddit threads, they're pulling up, NeoGAF threads, they're citing specific examples in the game, and so they're really, it feels like a piece of investigative journalism that they're really actively trying to present all of the information relating to this and allowing us to sort of draw our own conclusion about whether this is the video game equivalent of an urban legend or just something in the game that we don't understand yet.
Hmm.
I thought that for this kind of piece, it was really well done, really well supported, well researched, and credit to Kotaku for publishing it.
Indeed.
With that having been said, I think it's time to talk about what's up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
So, Captain Spike, I've been playing Dog.
Excuse me?
I've been playing Dog.
What does that mean?
Dang it, I was hoping you'd be like, what's up, Dog?
Well,
it'd be great if I was actually playing Nintendogs, but I have not been.
Well, what have you been playing?
Well, I just picked up a new Nintendo 3DS.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. I unfortunately do not have Xenoblade Chronicles yet, but I did take the opportunity to also pick up Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate and Majora's Mask 3D.
Oh, awesome.
Both of which are fantastic. I've also been playing some more Super Smash Bros. For Wii U and discovering that I really like playing Luigi.
Awesome. You know, I've been playing with you, obviously. I have to say, you're actually doing pretty good with Weege.
Thank you.
So
I'm a Luigi, I'm gonna win.
Definitely impressed by your Luigi game. Anything else?
Not really, we just recorded recently.
I guess that's true. Let's see, I'm progressing through Bloodborne finally. Since the last time I've talked about it, I've downed a few more bosses, so That's been really good. Definitely getting really into it. I did start Xenoblade Chronicles 3D, but I'm only about 20 minutes in, which if you've played that game, I'm basically still in the intro, so I don't have a lot to say about it yet, but the port so far, it seems to be a good quality port. The hit that the graphics took was not nearly as big of a hit as I expected. And overall, you know, I'm pretty into it. I'm enjoying the game and I can't wait to play more. On the PC front, I downloaded a really cool little indie game called Besiege that I'm really enjoying. It's almost like a medieval version of like The Incredible Machine, basically. Like, you have to build little siege weapons to, like...
Oh, cute.
...send autonomously, and hopefully, like, you've built it right so it can take down a castle. Yeah, it's super cool. I'm really into it. It's on Early Access, which is a problem for a lot of people, but it was, like, $6. I felt okay giving it a chance. And I enjoyed it enough to, I am enjoying it enough to recommend to y'all out there in Internet Radio Land if you're into that sort of thing. Also, you, Slaggy, because I think you would like it.
Wonderful.
I've been playing a little bit of J-Star's Victory Versus because I marathoned the entirety of what's aired so far of Assassination Classroom. And so last night I was like, I'm gonna pull out my Vita while I'm in bed and ended up trying to unlock Koro-sensei, who is a playable character in that game. You know, I've talked about J-Star's Victory Versus here on the show a little bit. Not the best game as a game. But if you're into the Shonen Jump franchises and properties, it's really fun just to see all of the characters sort of lovingly rendered and, you know, fighting with their all of their personal attacks. I think that's about it for what I've been playing. You know, Since last time we recorded, I finished my 120 stars run on Mario 64 on the virtual console of Wii U. So that was something
quite
I was
a response
really into.
Over on Miiverse.
Not quite a response. I got a handful of yas. It ain't that big a response. But that's all that comes to mind. I'm sure I'm missing something, but whatever. I play so many games, it's hard to keep up. Oh, I played, like, Pokemon Rumble World. I finally played some more Pokemon Shuffle. So yeah, both of which I'm really enjoying, despite the free-to-play game nonsense.
Wonderful.
Anyway, Slaggy, I have totally cock-teased you enough. It seems a couple of times that you were just about ready to dive into our social links. Why don't you get to it?
All right. For our social links question of the week, we asked, this week we're kicking off our fourth year looking at some of our favorite foursomes in gaming. Who are yours? And our bonus question over on Facebook was, self-servicing as it may be, what were some of your favorite Game Boy Year 3 memories? Hashtag love you mean it. We got a response. We got responses over on Facebook from Game Boy Super Couple Dan and Crystal D. Dan D said, "I think my favorite four is Locke, Terra, Shadow, and Saemon from Final Fantasy 3/6. Locke and Terra are the first characters you play, so I always felt like they were the main characters. Plus, Terra's Esper form is awesome. Shadow has an awesome theme song, and he's obviously an introvert, helping the party but going off on his own sometimes. So I could relate. And Saemon has a cool game mechanic." Entering a combo to perform an RPG attack was a bit mind-blowing.
Right?
And really interesting interpretation of our question. I wasn't even thinking of favorite four-player RPG parties. With that, you could just keep going and going and going. Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you all out there in Internet Radio Land right now, if you want to tweet at us with those in response to this question of the week and you want to do it now, please do. I would love to hear about your favorite four-man teams.
Yeah. Dan continues, my favorite episode memory, it's probably the Party Games Games Party, sponsored by Game Boy. I had a great time.
Aww. Thank you. We had a great time with you, too.
And his wonderful wife, Crystal D, said, I think the only game I've played with the foursome is Super Mario Brothers 2. So I'm going to go with that. I know it wasn't the best in the series, but it's still one of my favorites. Hate is going to hate. That's me. I love how, after all these years, I still remember the secrets, like where to throw the potion to get that extra heart.
Totally. And, just you wait until we talk about the Mario franchise, because I have a lot of love for that game, if you couldn't already tell.
Over on Twitter, we got a few tweets. KTaroE37 said, Blaze, Axel, Max, and Skate from Streets of Rage 2. Each character was different and fun to play as.
That nice. Is excellent. That is an excellent, excellent point. You know, I don't think about that game a whole lot, but, you know, you could definitely fit that into sort of the chronology I was talking about with beat-em-ups evolving, and it almost makes me wonder if Capcom didn't feel out-beat-em-upped by Sega when they really started to adapt that sort of change of making the characters more individualized.
I almost feel like we need a beat-em-up buoy. Which is not an invitation for you to beat us up. Please don't.
We could definitely talk about that, because that's something I would love to research and get a better focus on to present to our listeners. So Let's talk about that when we're off beer.
Yeah. Gamer Fox said, wait, is this in my dreams foursomes or for real foursomes? And then uses the mwah emoji. Hey.
Girl, I love your attitude.
We also got a few responses to our last episode, which was the Game Buoy Party Games Games Party, sponsored by GameBuoy.org. Dandy said the Game Buoy Party Games Games Party Party, that's what it's called, right? Was a ton of fun. Over on Twitter, Crystal YDS said, thank you for the Game Buoy Party podcast. The Pirate King had me laugh so hard I was crying. Good times.
Who said that?
Crystal Ydeus.
I'll be sure to tell him.
And Emiru69 said, a new GameBuoy.org episode I'm feeling. And it's a screenshot of Yumoto-kun from Cute High Earth Defense Club Love, the magical boy anime with very sparkly eyes. Aww. I also got a tweet from Dan Diaz saying, excellent article on GameBuoy.org by Slatkick on separating art from artists. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Dan.
Keitaro E37 was also wondering, when did year three start? Year three would have been April of last year. So if you have any GameBuoy memories now that our third year is officially wrapped up, you know, at the beginning of this month, please feel free to continue tweeting that at us. It makes us feel happy. And last but not least, something that I can relate to, Gamer Fox says, I'm like three or four episodes behind in Koopa Club. I want to start listening to GameBuoy.org. I have to continue Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep. I'll probably just snap.
Who said that?
Gamer Fox.
Ah, I relate to your struggle.
Pretty much, me too. And with that, we want to thank you for your feedback. We love your feedback. We love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings,
and reviews. I would go so far as to say, rather than just loving their feedback,
we thrive on it.
We love all of them.
Aww. We love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We like your Facebook likes. We effing love Twitter.
We effing love Twitter.
We really
Twitter.
Do. You can tweet me at Slidekick.
You can find me over at @SpikePoint.
And on Twitter for GameBuoy, it's @GameBuoy.org with the .org spelled out .dotorg.
GameBuoy.org with the .org spelled out .dotorg.
@ GameBuoyDotorg.
I'm not doing that.
And you can tumble with us on Tumblr and plus one us on Google Plus. I know that I've been slacking on those, but we will try to get that tidied up.
And how come we're not on MySpace, huh?
We're not on MySpace? I'll let you handle that.
No, I'll let you handle that. As penance.
Okay. If you'd like to email us at any time, whether it's for an expanded answer to a question of the week, just to say hello, to respond to a past episode, you can mail us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Wow, did Pirate Plup go through the change of life? mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org. There we go. And, of course, everything is available on our home base, GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org. If you're hearing us from Stitcher Radio, thank you for tuning in. We hope that you're enjoying.
And thank you for tuning in regardless of where you're tuning in.
Yes, I felt obligated to mention Stitcher.
Well, you do you.
And let's mention some other great podcasts that our listeners can listen to.
It's time for shout-outs. I guess I'll be doing everyone else. As ever and always, first off, I want to shout-out to VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, as well as the Game Over Takeover, your one-stop shop to go to for geekery galore. I'd be remiss not to mention Orange Lounge Radio, OLR for short, where every gamer has a voice and from whom I steal ever so many of my cues. I, of course, want to point you in the direction of Nintendo Fun Club, where you'll find platformers, positivity, and pop punk, as well as their sister show Enos Lives, which takes a look at many loved and lesser loved PlayStation 1 classics. I also want to point you in the direction of the Nintendo Love Fest, as well as that sister show, X-Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. I'd be remiss not to point out that Slagkick also does Reading is Fundamental, along with Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, myself, and Delvin from VG Realness, your weekly look at RuPaul's Drag Race while that show is in season, as well as the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. And last but never, ever, ever least, Tables, Ladders, and Podcast, a professional wrestling podcast for the common man. Slaggy, you know where to take us.
I'm taking you to a game bar.
I'm gonna take you to a game bar!
Game Bar is the gay video game prairie home companion and a part of the Hunty Bunch.
I'd like to also shout out to Koopa Club. That's Koopa with a Q and Club with a K. Koopa Club is an award-winning podcast about Nintendo and gaming with an LGBT twist. I believe the award was from their mothers. I'd like to also shout out to the appropriately named for this episode, Multitap Podcast. And this is a discussion podcast in the round about gaming then and now, featuring one of our great dear friends, Princess Irene, who originally got her start over on the Voice of Geeks Network as a guest on Horde House, the place for all things online gaming, but never too seriously. Over on Voice of Geeks Network, that's vognetwork.com. You can also tune in to Girls Gone WoW, where you can get a female's perspective on the world's most popular MMO. And last but certainly not least, I would like to shout out to La Palanca Podcast. Podcast por y para gay gamers latinoamericanos en español. As ever and always, I would like to shout out to the late, great Zelda Reorchestrated for our theme music. They were the project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music in gorgeous symphonic sound and will forever be pouring out a 40 into the great fairy fountain for them.
As ever and always, thank you so much for spending this lovely Sunday afternoon with us. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this show as much as we've enjoyed recording it.
And thank you for sticking around with us for 3 years. We hope you'll stick around for year four.
Well, we sure do. Whether you do or not, though, keep gaming, keep thinking, and
Ansatsu no Jikan.
Boop-a-boo!
Yeah, it's still making that crackle, and I don't know why.
Snap, crackle, pop your pussy like this.
The toilet fan.
Oh, well. Fuck it. I'll clean it up. You ready?
I mean, you have to consider that. I mean, I know you're a perfectionist, but...
Are you ready?
Are you ready for this?
Well played. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, I know,
Yeah, I was always like, who's that girl? It's Zoe!
Oh my god!
And thank you with Sticky...
There we go!
I said, hey! What's going on?
Meow meow. No, we love Pooh, though.